Hey everyone, Raven here. Today on Plants Save My Life, we're joined by Angie Roulier. She's a medical cannabis patient turned advocate and business owner. Angie was initially diagnosed with Charcot-Marie-Tooth, or CMT, an inherited nerve disorder. She has since found profound relief from medicinal cannabis. She's built a successful career sharing education and compassion to patients throughout Michigan, and Angie is the founder and CEO of Balance Branches Consulting. So join me as we welcome Angie to the show. Also, a quick disclaimer, while I make every effort to broadcast correct information, I myself am still learning. I promise to double-check all my facts, but I realize that plant medicine is a constantly changing science and art. So the views and opinions expressed on this show are intended purely for educational and informative purposes. No topics are intended to be construed as medical advice. So Angie, as of late, you've leaned in towards like education and consulting, but I'd really want to thank you for coming on the show and being able to express your story and how you really became a cannabis professional and how cannabis has helped your life in terms from a medical perspective.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I can't tell my story enough if it helps people.
Exactly, and that's why I'm happy to have you. I mean, my goal here is to hopefully inspire a little bit of compassion and knowledge throughout the industry to kind of enlighten those that are either in this industry or just curious about plant medicine to recognize that not all the stories are the ones you're going to see strictly in a clinical environment, that these are real people with real patient stories overcoming real battles.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's more than a couple of us out there.
Can you provide a little bit of background into I know you were diagnosed at a young age with a nervous condition?
So around 16, I started tripping and falling, and CMT, Charcot-Marie-Tooth, runs rampant through my family. They say there's a 50-50 chance of getting it. That's not the case. It has hit absolutely everybody on that side of the family.
Oh, wow.
Now, to varying degrees, some you can't really tell unless you're looking for it, and then there's others that are it's absolutely, obvious of what's going on. And with it being the most common neurodegenerative disease out there that comes in hereditary form, but yet it is on the rare disease list, which is a little bit frustrating
for our
family. So we're working on that on the other side to try and get that out. But it comes with tripping, falling, neuropathy, nerve pain, nerve damage, and things of that nature. So as you can imagine, it's a lot of pills. It's a lot of muscle relaxers, it's a lot of beta blockers and things of that nature, which really don't work great for your liver, your kidneys, your stomach. And in mid-30s, going to the doctor, again, I'm taking a fistful of pills at every meal, and my kidneys were actually starting to show extreme failure problems.
Oh, wow.
So I had asked my neurologist, I said, well, what can I do with this? And she just kind of shrugged her shoulders. She's like, it's expected. You've been taking pills for so long that, that's just kind of the way it goes. And that was pretty much the end of the conversation.
That's heavy. Did they tell you that previously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just, it's like it was a natural course of things, and it shouldn't, it should be expected. It shouldn't be a concern. But, as a single mom in my mid-30s, it's just absolutely not. I found it unacceptable. And Michigan had started their caregiver program back in 2008. This was about that time. So I kind of looked into cannabis from a science perspective. Now, I've been a recreational user since high school. And of course, I kind of called bullshit on it. I said, how can something I've been using recreationally for so long and now all of a sudden be good for me? But the more and more I dove in and fell down that rabbit hole, cannabis is a neuroprotectant. As a muscle relaxer and all of these things, it was a natural route for me to go. And I won't lie, it took definitely more than a minute for me to get off of all of these pharmaceuticals that I had been taking for decades. It wasn't pretty, but I did do it. I do not recommend that people just automatically start going off of their medication because they're using cannabis. Absolutely not. You take these things over so many years and your body gets so used to it, and the withdrawals are absolutely no joke. This is something that you have to have a conversation with your doctor about, and that you are considering cannabis to get off of some of these prescriptions. They don't have to like it, but they do have to respect the fact that you want to have some control over your own healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of that patient autonomy is a huge part of the therapeutic process that cannabis invites. I'm really curious. You mentioned that you used cannabis recreationally before you started using it in a medical aspect. So I was curious how your journey was transitioning and understanding it medically in terms of your use practices. Were you using any additional types of any change in your doses, change in how you were taking it, anything like that?
Oh, yeah. So as a recreational user, I smoked it. I would, smoke a joint on a Friday night, out with my friends. And doing it medically, I was looking into, because of the severity of the drugs that I was taking, I had a caregiver pick out RSO for me. And it was actually a one-to-one RSO, when at the time I had no comprehension of, what one-to-one even meant. So he kind of walked me through it and explained, half THC, half CBD, and being RSO, it carried all the other good cannabinoids in there that weren't necessarily cooked off along with the terpenes. The first time I did it, I had no idea that anything could be that strong. I was a mess. I was an absolute mess. So I learned to dial it back a little bit, and then of course, the tolerance builds up, and you go from taking, four Norcos a day. So I would take three Norcos a day, and then that fourth dose I would do with RSO. And that is kind of how I weaned it out of my system. And then I would, I went back to my neurologist. I'd have to say about a year later, and she was just there to fill my scripts, and I told her I didn't need any. And she had asked why, and I said, well, because I've converted over to cannabis and it's actually doing wonders. And she just kind of laughed and she says, you'll be back. That was 8 years
Oh,
ago.
wow. I take it you haven't been back then.
No, it's been 8 years.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. That's really good to hear. Well, next, what happened next?
So then, well, I was a realtor. In 2008, we all know it all went down the drain.
Yeah, not a good time to be in realty.
It was not, and it was really disconcerting too, because you saw a lot of good people being taken advantage of. You saw a lot of slime bags come out of the woodwork to take advantage of the situation. I was bummed about it. It kind of broke my heart. So I figured if I was going to start over in a new industry, why not it be something where I could help other people and kind of show them how it had helped me? So I started in the cannabis industry working as a receptionist with a certification doctor. And we would see hundreds of people come through. And not your typical, who you would think would come after cannabis. I mean, I sat next to an old woman who swore she put cannabis butter on everything, on her toast, on her fish, and she was just happy as a clam at 85 years old. So it's not who you really think. So I moved on a little bit farther. I wanted to be more interactive with the actual people. So I went into reception for a provisioning center, moved up to budtender, moved up to management. Like I said, I had run a shop here in Oakland County. I did that for a while. And again, back to my CMT, I got a little old for standing behind a counter for 12 hours a day, 5, 6 days a week. So I kind of moved that over into the consulting. And, as we brought on new budtenders, into the shop, I put them through a rigorous training program. I mean, everything from the history, I think I did the top six cannabinoids, top 12 terpenes. And how to interact with these patients. That is one thing that the retail will see is you may have a 22-year-old behind the counter, but you've got a 72-year-old on the other side of the counter. There's a huge disconnect. The 72-year-old does not want to listen to the young whippersnapper behind. And the young whippersnapper just really can't grasp the respect that is due to the 72-year-old. So I do my best to kind of train them to go back and forth and, have a relationship to where they can communicate, educate, and understand each other.
Wow, I think that's really, really doing the good work. Because I often say the budtenders have one of the hardest jobs out there. I mean, having to distill the small amount of education and information we have to someone who is likely less knowledgeable about the plant and looking for it for a medicinal use. I think that's an incredibly difficult position for people to be in. So being able to train them rigorously like you are is really, really profound. Did you find it was, as you were kind of going through the ranks of budtender, working with patients, and eventually running your own shop, how did you find the training you were receiving to be at that time?
Oh, absolutely. Because, and I'm going to chalk a lot of it up to the fact that nobody really knew much. So I was starting with the basics of, what does CBD do? What is an acid form? things of that nature. And then once I got them to the point where I actually was, you know most of this stuff, I would actually do like little raffles during the week. If somebody could teach us, out of the staff, if somebody could teach me something about cannabis I didn't know before, they got a prize at the end of the week.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually had my staff, on downtimes going through the research and trying to find something new and improved, something that we can actually use to help our patients out there.
Yeah. Exactly. It's something I always say on my students about as well, is kind of staying abreast of all the current research, keeping up with the news and getting into the habit of looking at that, just because it gets them in the mindset of things are always changing. Cannabis is incredibly dynamic, and the news that we had 10 years ago and the research we have 10 years ago might not be the same thing we're looking at in 10 years from now. I have a much broader understanding of it.
It is, and it's a labor of love. I mean, every single day I am still learning something new, and I try and keep the culture in it as well. because I mean, it's a fantastic thought. You know what I mean? We're not here to hurt. We're not here to harm. We just want to be able to take care of ourselves and take care of our neighbor. So I don't understand. You can be both. You can have the science to back you, and you can still celebrate 420.
Oh yeah, exactly. Exactly. I believe all plants have spirits, and like the spirit of cannabis can't be tainted. I mean, not until Marlboro's producing cartons of cannabis cigarettes. Other than that, I don't think it can really be tainted. I know it.
Yeah, no. And I'm just, even with the FDA approved drugs out there that do use cannabinoids, I believe there's only one that actually uses the whole plant. And even then, it makes me nervous. Cannabis hasn't killed anybody in 2,000 years. Cannabis alone, I'm going to be very clear about that. If you're mixing it with other medications, it can absolutely be detrimental. But cannabis alone, it has not harmed anybody in 2,000 years. And then Big Pharma is going to get their hands on it, and I'm afraid they're going to mix it with all this other junk, and then people are going to start getting hurt, and then they're going to blame cannabis, where it's not cannabis. It's the other stuff that they put in there.
Yeah, I can definitely resonate with that. I also think that a lot with like the new minor cannabinoids, the semi-synthetics, like your Delta 10s, your HHC, your THCO, I worry that something detrimental is going to happen there, and all of cannabis as a whole is going to put a big smear on like this kind of gray market right now. I see it as like a recreational light here in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it is scary. Because most of these, they don't come in natural form. And if they do, it's itty bitty, itty bitty. Believe they're minors for a reason. I don't think you're supposed to be taking these in an overabundance. But again, the business and the corporate and, the whole nine yards, it's just, bigger, faster, stronger, which is a little bit scary. I'd like to teach my people to be snobs, be very, very particular about what they take.
Exactly. Yeah. I also wanted to ask, Angie, how did it feel talking to your doctor regarding weaning off your medication? How receptive were they to that? Were they able to really work with you, or did they kind of just leave you to your own?
Oh, yeah, not at all. I have seen, obviously, with my condition, I've seen so many different doctors, and I would say like 1 out of 10 might encourage it. The pain specialists, they get extremely angry because I'm sure we're taking their jobs away from them. The neurologist, my current neurologist, actually, he mocks wow. my cannabis use. I'll put down, what is the medication you're taking? And I would say, a wide spectrum of, cannabinoids. And he's like, cannabinoids, whatever that means, and rolls his eyes. And it's a little disconcerting. So I've gotten to the point where I now leave research in his lobby.
Someone's got to.
Pick it up. My name's not on it. It is just a straight, it'll be a straight up research, from the National, Institute of Health or, John Hopkins. And I'd love to argue with him because what they were trained on are studies from John Hopkins and the Mayo Clinic and things like that. So it's good enough for them to learn one side of medicine. But for some reason, now all of a sudden, it's not a credible source. It's a little frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. And which it does get frustrating whenever you think about how a lot of doctors and medical professionals haven't necessarily received, training in the endocannabinoid system or a lot of extensive training in cannabis science. So it just kind of leaves a huge gap to really fulfill there. I've learned, like you said, a lot of people are very eager to learn about cannabis, but like you said, I'm kind of getting over the stigma is the most difficult part. Having them not roll their eyes and having them understand that it is being really used medicinally. It's not medicinal just so people can go get it and get high. It really is medicinal.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not going anywhere. This free train is absolutely not going to stop. So doctors do absolutely have to pick up the slack. Unfortunately, there's generations of doctors out there who don't feel that they need to learn anything else from this point on, except for, you know, whatever con ed that they're forced to take. They simply aren't open-minded enough. You know, I mean, leeching worked for God knows how long before they figured out that there actually might be a better way. And, you know, it's been my experience that doctors don't like to be told how to do their job from their patients. It's been so long that they've been just, you know, they haven't been questioned to where, you know, they don't feel that the need to change, even though you are showing them, you know, clear studies of, especially a neurologist, this could be a neuroprotective.
And you're living proof.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm walking, you know, when I have, you know, a week on my feet. I mean, that's, at my age, it's almost unheard of. I get a little bit frustrated with the doctors. And again, you almost have to kind of trick them. So for example, the last time I went in for an antibiotic, I asked them if it came with a grapefruit warning. And he says, no, there's no grapefruit warning. Why do you ask? I said, well, I'm a cannabis patient and it could absolutely interact with this drug. And he just kind of looked at me like, how do you know that? And I don't. And I just kind of left it at that. And he's like, no. No grapefruit warning. I was like, okay, you know, but at least I put a little thing in his head to, you know, maybe you should look into this if for nothing else for the safety of your patients.
Yeah, exactly. And Jordan brings up a good point in the messages there. He indicated that, you know, in previous generations, the previous times, doctors were happy to hand out cannabis and opium tinctures and tonics, you know?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, it was until, you know, the marijuana tax law in 1937, you know, they were prescribing it left and right. And then, that came along and they actually had to pay a fee. They had to register. Doesn't that sound familiar? You know, and actually here in Michigan, and I'm a little disappointed about it, and I actually have to get on social media and see if I can get some other smart people to chime in on it. But in Michigan, they actually just changed the law to now our tinctures actually have to contain alcohol.
Interesting.
Like the old school pharmacopoeia. I mean, traditionally, and by definition, a tincture is, alcohol-based.
Alcohol-based, yeah.
Right, but there's so many parents with kids with autism. There's, you know, so many minors that, you know, they're taking this tincture and it's actually working for them, but it's an MCT, you know, oil-based product. You don't think twice about giving a six-year-old something with coconut oil, you know, to whereas now they're going to change it all and add alcohol. As a parent, I mean, do you continue to give this product? And not only that, I mean, how well is that alcohol carrier going to work versus a fat to carry, you know, your cannabinoids to where they need to go?
Absolutely. And not to mention the number of, you know, the number of side effects that can come along with, like you said, children or infants or younger people who might need a dose of that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I didn't think it was a really smart way to go. I really wish some of these states would converse with people who can put this out there and go, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but you have to understand that.
Yeah, I think that's really what's pervading. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily because of prohibition or because of federal regulations, but there's just a lack of communication throughout. You know, the producers and the formulators aren't necessarily speaking with the regulators in a lot of these states to really discuss what the patients need. And like we kind of talked on earlier, throughout that whole conversation, the patient experience is really missing ultimately.
Yeah, no, they really are. It's got to be frustrating for them, but I don't think they know enough to be frustrated as much as you and I get. There was a time where Michigan actually had a THC cap on their topicals.
I remember that.
Yeah, we went bonkers. We went absolutely. It was like 60 milligrams of THC was like the high end is where they capped it. So you just rendered topicals useless.
Yeah,
pretty much, you know, because the bioavailability is not great.
I also had another question. You mentioned that the syndrome also affects your family as well, right? Your siblings?
Yes.
Have you talked to them about using cannabis as medicine as all? Have they had a similar experience, or how's kind of that going? If you don't mind sharing a little bit on that.
No, absolutely not. So both of my parents, not real. I mean, they're comfortable with the CBD, you know, like everybody is, just because it, you know, happens to be, you know, non-psychoactive, or should I say non-intoxicating? That's a term that we have to get rid of. Anything that changes, you know, your mental is going to be, you know, psychoactive. So let's go to the
I've always kind of wondered that as well. I was like, well, I mean, if it really relaxes me, that is kind of psychoactive in a way.
Absolutely. So we'll say non-intoxicating. But I mean, they went to Ann Arbor in the 60s. So apparently they missed the class or didn't, you know, make the meeting, you know, about how beneficial this could be. My brother is far worse off physically than I am. And I have tried guinea pigging him with a bunch of different combinations, whether it's THCA, even as much as the RSO, to kind of help him out. And the struggle that I have, not only with my own family, but with a lot of people out there, is they want instant gratification.
Yep.
They want it to work, and they want it to work right now. They don't have the patience to actually try to turn it into a regimen to see if it could actually help. And, you know, with my brother being my only sibling, you can imagine our language isn't exactly clean when we fight over, you know, how he's supposed to be taking this and, you know, how he refuses to be patient enough. So maybe I can still get him to come around. I don't know. I nail him with this kind of stuff every holiday season.
Oh, so. Yeah, exactly. Right. What a better conversation to have around the table, right?
Right, for sure.
You also mentioned a little bit that it technically qualifies on the rare disease list. I'm not really familiar with that. So what kind of like boundaries and obstacles did you have to overcome with that?
I wouldn't say boundaries so much as, you know, you see some of these researchers and the neurologists, they kind of glaze over because now they see you as a guinea pig.
I see.
Because it's rare and it doesn't come through very often. And I mean, they light up when they, you know, they go down your chart and they see you've got CMT. So all of a sudden, you know, they want to, you know, pick you with, you know, pins and, you know, electrocute you to see how your nerves react, even though you just had that test done 3 weeks ago. So it's a lot of testing, you know, and at the end of the day, it's a shoulder shrug still. It's, you know, we can give you pain pills. We can suggest physical therapy, but I mean, that's about the extent of it.
Yeah, I can definitely see what you say there. I mean, suddenly it would become an episode of Dr. House or something.
Right. Yeah. Don't tap on the glass, please and thank you.
You also mentioned at the beginning of our call that you had a lot of issues like with misdiagnosis. If you don't mind sharing, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we did. So we knew it was CMT. So my mother was diagnosed back in the 60s, which you can only imagine what that protocol was like.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And it was lumped in with muscular dystrophy because it was a neuromuscular degenerative disease. So she was treated that way. And then as, you know, science came along, became more recognized as something a little bit separate, but under still the same headline, you know, that category. But the first test that I had was an EMG where they literally stick a needle at the time into your nerves, and then they hit the switch for the electricity just to see how it bounces and things like that. And because CMT 1A is the most common, they just kind of lumped us into that. But we had noticed, especially between my brother and I, that we have different symptoms. We have a lot of the same symptoms. But for example, I will get Charlie horses in my sternum, in my diaphragm. It'll just
very unpleasant.
Just decides to freak out for no apparent reason. My brother, he actually lost some of the muscles surrounding his vocal cords. So it actually changed his voice. He's in the medical side of things at U of M. And so he had bigger brains that he could pick to see what was actually going on. So he got into part of a study down at Wayne State, and they did all of the tests and this and that and the other thing. And he had told them, well, I have a sister with different, you know, symptoms, but some of the same symptoms, you know, the drop foot, you know, the neuropathy in the hands. And they said, well, you can't be. You both have to be the exact same type. So we're at the CMT conference and we're sitting down next to a woman who heads up the CMTA. And he's like, I've got type X. I said, I've been diagnosed with type A. And she looks at both of us. She goes, do you have a different mother? We both started laughing. We're like, we better not. You know? And she's like, well, then it's impossible. It's like, well, it's not impossible. We're sitting right next to you. So I went back in and went through the gauntlet of tests again. And Dr. Lee, a fantastic man, he says, you've been misdiagnosed. He goes, you have type X. You have always had type X. But, and I like to equate a lot to cannabis. We learn more and more every day about it. And like, you know, tomorrow, a new minor cannabinoid can pop up. Okay. Just like CMT, tomorrow, a brand new, you know, side effect or, you know, a way to organize it could come up. So we're just trying to, you know, stay on top of things and give people the research that they need by being guinea pigs. So people aren't misdiagnosed.
Well, I appreciate you doing the good work on that front as well, not only for cannabis, but also, you know, for getting pricked and prod and shocked just to, you know, so hopefully in the future, people that have CMT don't have to go through so much misdiagnosis and have to try out different medications and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
With that, you mentioned you've been doing a lot of good work to help people, veterans, patients, to navigate them through the cannabis system. I know a lot of dispensaries aren't necessarily fulfilling that model. A lot of dispensaries might just provide it to them. And we talked a little bit about how there's kind of a missing connection between the medical practitioners and medical professionals and the medical cannabis, recreational cannabis field. So I'm curious as to, like, in your perfect world, here in a few years or so, what would you would say would be a good medical model for us to be able to tackle all the obstacles we have with cannabis? And, you know, things with like how it affects everyone differently, getting a clean medical supply, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the more that these people know, when I was working in the store, I wanted people to leave knowing more about cannabis when they walked in. And, you know, like I said before, you almost got to kind of trick them. you know, to learn things, you know, back when you could, you know, we used deli style and they could stick their nose in the jar and, you know, smell it and they would smell lemons. So I would go off on my little spiel about limonene and they actually learned something without knowing that they were being taught something. I'm a big believer in that. There's some amazing educational posters out there that just simply break down what terpenes can do what cannabinoids are known for what. Those things should be wallpapered all over the wall, you know, in the waiting room, you know, inside, you know, the actual med room to where a bud tender can walk over with the patient and point out, this is why I'm recommending THCA and show them the laundry list of things that, you know, THC has the potential to do. It's really this one-on-one. And I believe that's where medical has dropped the ball. And I don't think that they really care to pick the ball back up again. I mean, we used to be a society where house calls for doctors were a thing, and you knew your patients personally. I think that has a lot to do with why people come to cannabis, especially if it's a last-ditch effort. Nobody's hearing them. Nobody's listening. Nobody's even looking up from the chart. There's something to be said about when somebody walks in the door and you can greet them by a first name and ask, you know, how their dog is, or, you know, just to make it just that much more personal. It makes people a little bit more open to speak about what's going on, especially when it comes to veterans. They really don't like to dump their purse all over the counter. So, you know, you got to find ways to work around that. And hiring veterans to work in your stores is just beyond highly recommended, because they have somebody that they can relate to, whether it's, you know, decades apart in service or countries apart in service. There still is that camaraderie. And they seem to be able to help each other a little bit better than, you know.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And really, they would be the only type of person to understand what exactly they're in there trying to help, you know. So I think that that's incredibly powerful. So what do you think would be a good way? I mean, it sounds like stigma is kind of a huge hurdle that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, working with medical professionals and then also working with your patients in your dispensary. How do you think is the best way to kind of overcome that stigma on a large scale? Because, I mean, there's still a lot of people that think it's only medical just so people can get in there and get a joint, you know?
Like right.
It's very interesting to see that stigma still exists in professional industries and just all throughout.
Well, it only took us 80 plus years to get this far.
Yeah.
It's going to definitely take more than a minute. When it comes to the hardcore medical professionals, research. I mean, that's all you can do is don't listen to me. Read the research. It's there. They're not taking the time. I had spine surgery last year, and my ortho surgeon actually was extremely interested in the way that I took cannabis after my surgery. He wanted updates. He wanted to know what I took and how I took it, so he could potentially, you know, recommend it to other patients after they have the exact same kind of surgery. So every now and again, there is, you know, a light that shows me that, you know, maybe somebody's paying attention. And I really hate to put it in a box, but it's a generational thing. There are so many, you know, older medical professionals that just, they won't hear it. To where the younger ones, they kind of poo-poo on it because it's not being taught in medical school, which blows my mind. It should at least be touched on. I mean, it is a major system in your body promoting homeostasis. I mean, how could you? It's like ignoring the nervous system.
Yeah.
You know, or ignoring your, you know, immune system.
I agree. Imagine if we had like a whole new bone we discovered, they wouldn't just glance over it. They wouldn't just ignore it.
Oh, no, it'd be everywhere. Yeah, absolutely. And then someone would try and patent it. So.
Sad but true. Yeah. Sad but true.
Yeah, and to be, yeah, I don't mean to run up, but and to be clear, I no longer run the shop. I have been out of the retail for about 3 years now, and I deal specifically with, you know, one-to-one patients, and then, you know, training bud tenders, you know, as an independent contractor.
Can resonate with that, because that's how I'm trying to go as well. Is lean a little bit more towards training and educating, because I think that's, you know, if you can teach a man to fish, that's all what it's all about, right?
No, very cool. And the fact that you know, you're running that thing over there in Maryland, I mean, that is a huge start, because I got to imagine they're sitting around your feet like kindergartners, just looking up at you, you know, just wanting to soak up all of this information.
I'm very, very, very lucky to be able to hold my role there whenever I was there. That was very nice. What I had to really focus on is trying to build the supplemental stuff that the school couldn't necessarily focus on. Like, the school wasn't allowed to dig into horticulture or extractions or some botany type stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, it was more so the medical pharmacological route. That's mostly what it's focused on. Of course, history and some of the necessary backstory and that kind of stuff in terms of like analysis and policy. But the bulk of it was pharmacological. So my goal was to just kind of support that in terms of like bringing the extraction education, bringing some botany education or horticulture education, so everyone felt like they were getting a full education.
Well, for sure. I mean, people need to know that they can walk up to a cannabis plant, and if they pluck a leaf and shove it in their mouth, it's THCA.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which is like a shot of B12. Mm-hmm. It's not going to get you high. But again, and like you said, you get into the whole, you know, plant, and, you know, people are spraying everything these days, which is disgusting. It's just for, they're pretty much just spray painting their incompetence all over these plants.
Absolutely.
You know, but people need to know. You know, it's just, I believe it's, you can't just pick one side or the other, because it all works together.
Exactly. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I sometimes think back to, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I would think to myself like, wow, the ability to purchase cannabis legally, what a dream, how amazing. And then now it's like, I'm in it. I'm already indoctrinated. I've learned all this, and I can't see it. I mean, it is amazing that we can purchase it legally, of course, but now I see all the things that could be better. You know, I see all the ways that we need to fix things. I see all the things that are lacking, the lack of standardization, all kinds of stuff across the board.
Yeah, well, that's what we get for wanting to look behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly, right? Well, Angie, it's been awesome having you on. I mean, I really appreciate you sharing your story. Where can people find you? Are you on Instagram, your consulting site, anything like that?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find my company, which is Balanced Branches, on Facebook, or I've got a website up where I am constantly updating my research. And what I've done is I've broken it down by medical condition.
Oh, nice.
To make it a little bit easier for people who are looking. So not only the medical conditions, but currently I'm working on the different cannabinoids, the different terpenes. You can find, there's a whole section on pets. There's a section on veterans, and it's absolutely free. We just want people to be able to educate themselves with solid resources. I mean, we're not talking Reddit or,
you know,
it's things of that nature. I mean, these are coming from credible, you know, medical facilities and things of that nature. So I really push for people to use that and please, knowledge is power. Use it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're at a really exciting time right now. So, like, knowledge is power. We have the access to the knowledge, and we're getting more of it each and each day. So, I mean, right now, such an exciting time for plant medicine.
Yeah, no, it is. And it is super cool. There's just so many, I mean, we've gotten away from it so far that, you know, I love that we're kind of coming back full circle to where, you know, somebody might have, you know, a cup of tea to put themselves to bed instead of taking an Ambien.
Yeah, no, that's the goal, right? That's the goal.
It's for sure.
Okay, everyone, that's all we have for today. That was Angie Roulier. You can find her on balancedbranches.com to learn more about her cannabis consulting. But if you liked this episode, please send it to someone else who you know would enjoy it. We'd also be eternally grateful if you were to rate us 5 stars and follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. For questions, comments, and community, head over to our official Instagram at plantsavemylife.pod. Until next time, everyone, have a beautiful week.